time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode number 18 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I am your host, Alyssa Barnes. Some of you may know that the National Finals Rodeo just wrapped up on Saturday night, and I had a chance to go down there for a few days, which was awesome. I've been many times, but it's just always an amazing experience, and there's no place I would rather be for those 10 days in December every year. So today, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a recap of this year's NFR, and to help me do that, I invited Lori O'Harver on the show. Now, Lori is an awesome writer, and she typically covers a lot of bronc riding. You can check out more of that on her Bronc Riding Nation Facebook page. This week in Vegas, she was doing stories for Cowboys and Indians magazine and a few other publications, and she really got a good inside look at not only the world championship races at the rodeo itself, but some of the other events going on around town. So today, Lori and I are going to discuss some of those world championship races, how Las Vegas really does get transformed into Cowboy Town in December, and we're going to talk about a few of rodeo's more colorful characters, you might say. I really think you guys are going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. So how's everything going?
Oh, it was an astounding NFR. It was really very good on a lot of different levels. We started a new gig this year. Warpaint Media started a new gig with Cowboys and Indians, which opened a lot of doors and gave us the opportunity to go some places we hadn't been before, such as cover some. We covered Trick Pony and Clay Walker.
Awesome.
And looked up the new cowboy cult heroes, Dale Brisby, as well as Luke Kaufman. And did some great work with them, some photo shoots and stuff. So, you know, all those satellite incidences, to include the Gold Buckle reunion at the Palms, where, oh my gosh, all the legends were, and they told those old stories about, you know, going from rodeo to rodeo by train. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
You could, you know, in the posh surroundings of the Palms, you could smell campfires and coffee as they talked. It was just this amazing thing. It was good stuff.
I bet. That sounds awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I really wanted to talk to you just because you have been like in the trenches at the NFR for the last, well, how many days have you been down there now?
I got here the day before the first round and did that specifically so I would be fresh for the World Bucking Futurity finale and sale, the select session of those Futurity horses sales at Binion's. So that was really the opening event, and you know, and then NFR kicked off, and that's 10 days of, are we really here? This really just happened, you know. It doesn't matter how old you get or how many times you've done it, you know, when the house lights go down for the first time, it's such a thrill. It is such a thrill. So we're just honored to be here.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of days to spend in Vegas, as much running around as you've been doing. That's
I bet
you're tired.
It's, you know, we average about 4 hours of sleep out here.
Oh, geez.
And, you know, wear several different hats and support several different missions and views of, you know, the backstory of the rodeo world, as well as some political focuses that we're working on. So today in the Las Vegas Review Journal, a Sunday sports story ran on the futurity concept and, you know, what goes on with the bucking horses on that level. So, you know, we're real happy to be able to facilitate a lot of other media sources. There's a New York Times team following around a certain bronc riding brotherhood for a story that they're about to do. So, you know, interesting to kind of have a little bit of a part in that and, you know, just doing what we do, which is, you know, I mean, my team lives to support the bronc riding community and nobody really does it better than PRCA right now. So we're just proud to be here.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. It seems like there was just so much stuff that happened this year. And I don't know if, you know, I was just more in tune with it or if there just was a lot more stuff going on. But I want to talk about, you know, some of the, you know, just the championship races and some of the behind the scenes stuff that was going on and just kind of get your take on some of the really well publicized things like Fallon Taylor, and I don't even know where to start, but
there were a lot of interesting stories that happened outside the bronc riding this year. As you know, mm-hmm. I'm primarily a bronc riding reporter, a dedicated bronc riding reporter. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine is Ted Kimsey. We go back forever before little Sage Kimsey was born. So, you know, and Sage is such a darling young man. He'll be such a fine representative for rodeo. So that forced me to really pay attention to the bull riding this year. Mm-hmm. Junior Nagata is the Brazilian roper who we first saw at the American, little wild boy.
Yes.
So had the opportunity to meet him and, you know, just learn more of his story, which is astounding. So, you know, even the team roping was interesting to me this year, which is something I generally sleep through. Fallon. Fallon is such an amazing human being, and what she has done for the sport of barrel racing. Over the last 4 days, she has gotten 1,000 plus emails from all over the globe thanking her for wearing a helmet during the barrel racing. Most of these connections had people who had suffered, you know, traumatic head injury. Mm-hmm. And have been campaigning, been helmet devotees ever since. So for someone like Fallon, who's A, a fashion plate, B, a top hand rider, have you seen her ride that screaming little pony she calls Baby Flo? You know what? I mean, she's an electric performer. We ask her just for giggles, if you had an alter ego, who would that be and why? And her answer was an immediate Beyonce, because I feel like I'm a performer who needs a lot of costume changes. You've got to love this girl. You know, I mean, she takes it from flamboyant and out there and completely full of herself to on her blogs and her YouTube. I mean, she helps other barrel racers to include. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite post of hers was something about how when we see new people come into the arena, it's historically, if you've been that new person, it's historically a tough break-in. You know, I mean, you've got to prove yourself in the arena before you're even treated like a human being. And Fallon, as a top 10 in the world barrel racer and now the new reigning world champion, is wonderful to take time to tell the thousands who follow her to don't disrespect those people coming in. Don't make them earn their spurs. They've earned their spurs or they wouldn't be there. Welcome them and support them. So she, to me, is one of the greatest role models that cowgirls have today. You know, I mean, just an astonishing story.
Yeah, I read that post that she put on Facebook as well. And it really struck a chord with me, because I'm all about helping people get into, you know, whether it's rodeo or just learning to ride or whatever the case may be for them. But to have Fallon step up and encourage others to do that, that really said a lot for her character. So
she's a champion for the cause. I fell in love with her during the American, actually. She was doing the color commenting for the barrel racing.
Yeah, that's right.
And she said that I looked down there, I walked the arena, and I looked down there, and I looked back, and I realized that there is a, you know, these horses are pulling up in a short little trap down there. The timer's on the mouth of the gate, and there was no banner on the gate, and I just knew somebody was going to get a barrel horse with their nachos. So I went and found a banner, and I hung that up. And I thought, good for you. I mean, not only, you know, I mean, a lot of women would brush their hair and make sure their mascara was right and, you know, step behind a microphone and be done. Fallon got in the trenches and made it work for the barrel racers. So I've always been a big Fallon Taylor fan.
Yeah. Was this her first world championship this year?
This actually is her first world championship.
Yeah. I was thinking it was.
And wasn't her first NFR? I believe she was 14.
Oh, I was thinking that maybe you would remember. I was thinking it was 14 or 16, something like that. But it's amazing.
I'm thinking 14. You know, maybe. Just an amazing individual.
And then she took a few years off to go do some modeling and some acting and then came back.
Right.
And she's married to an NFL football player or something, isn't she?
She's married to a football player. You know, the only sport I know anything about is rodeo. Everything else kind of, I know there's a thing called the Super Bowl. I like to use the term World Series, regular season and postseason in rodeo journalism. But that's what I know about baseball. You know? So I was actually thinking the other day it'd be fun to write a top 10 list of why being a rodeo cowboy is more fun than being a baseball player. And it starts with better hats, Number two, horse is actually still inside the horse hide, you know, and goes on from there. It's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's touch on a race that I'm sure you probably followed pretty closely, knowing you, and that is the bronc riding. I mean, boy, the Wright brothers.
If it wouldn't have been for the average, this was the tightest race in the world. There was no way to upset Spencer Wright in the average. It wasn't going to happen. During the seventh round, believe it, no, it was the eighth. Heath DeMoss won the eighth round. And I'm a big fan of the family. You know, I lived for a while in Louisiana, so I really understand that kind of, you know, let the good times roll mentality.
Yes.
And they're, I love this family. So, you know, we had a good time with that. And at the time, you know, Heath had stepped up into the top of the standings, but the average race hadn't been decided. And if you truly do the math, you know, technically, yes, he was leading it during the eighth after that win, because his, you know, he was up there good in the average as well. But when you factored in what the average was going to be, and there's so much added, it's like, no, Spencer, this was kind of a shoe-in for Spencer. He would have had to fall off his last three in order to not win it. But Spencer is going to make an amazing world champion for us. I mean, the Wright phenomena is just astonishing in itself. Evelyn Wright, the mama, has one more of her own sons to prove, and that would be no, actually, I believe Spencer's the last of her own sons to prove. Now we're into the generation where Cody's sons are coming on.
Yeah.
Rusty Wright was Rookie of the Year. Ryder Wright made his debut at the World Bucking Futurity Finale, which is, you know, we go there to see the premier horses, to get a sneak peek at the horses that are going to be at the NFR next year, because over 50% of the horses coming through that sale do. But we also go there to see the new Wright brothers debut. You know, the Wright debutants are there. Right. Yeah. So Ryder cracked out this year. He's 16 years old. He's no bigger than a minute. Looks gorgeous on him. Went into the short go at that match, winning it, sitting real pretty, and absolutely spurred himself right off of his short go horse. You know, it was one of those things where I've never seen. You know, you see barrel horses overridden quite a bit, and you understand the concept. I've really never seen a top-level bucking horse overridden, and that young man was doing it. I mean, he was still scratching at the air when he was going to dirt, you know. So it's going to be fun to watch, you know, watch this whole story develop as you know, moving on. Wade Sundell had a real good shot going in. Wade is always a character and so much fun. We got there, and when they did the back number presentation, there was a lot of the bronc riders were wearing beards and had long fur coats, throwback to the '70s, a la Bobby Hooter Brown.
I saw a picture of that.
So, you know, we always want to see them step out of their shells and make some kind of a statement, like Fallon, you know, be visible, be who you are, be there, represent your sport.
Absolutely.
So after Wade won, he won like the second round, I believe. He came up in there, was all happy. During the third round, he got one jump dropped in the gate. He said his words, well, they had to ask me to get up and get out of the way so they could close the gate. Most embarrassing moment of my rodeo career. So the next night he comes back and wins it. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, I can't wait for him to come up in this media room. They keep us in a cave down below Thomas and Matt.
I've been there.
they will run the contestants past you, you know. So Wade steps up in there. Absolutely clean shaven with cut hair. And I looked at him and scratched my head and said, change of luck. And he said, well, you know, that's one thing. And the other thing is I was so embarrassed the night before that, you know, I needed to change this beard and cut my hair off so maybe nobody would recognize me. That was just a horrible, embarrassing. And then, you know, he looked at himself in one of the monitors and went, oh, but then there's this baby face. It was so hysterical. It's like, no, honey, you're handsome. You're handsome. Now, it took a long time to win my heart for Wade Sundell because I'm not a fan of the beard. And I'm watching all these baby bronc riders emulate him, and I spit nails for like 3 years. But he eventually did win my heart, and when he wanted heart and soul. I'm now the president of the Wade Sundell fan club, along with several others.
Oh, wow.
The DeMoss brothers, always good. Cody came so close. He's in the category of one of the best bronc riders who never won a gold buckle. He joins mm-hmm. Rod Hay and several others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Cody's still going. His career, he's got a little age on him, but he's working out and riding better than ever before. He has it's not really a choke, but he doesn't ride well in Thomas and Mack. And, you know, for years, the only place I ever saw him ride was there. And then I got back out on the trail. Holy cow. I mean, the ride he put on Stace Smith's Resistol's top hat last night was the most elegant, poetic, beautiful ride of all of the NFR. It was gorgeous. Mm. I'd seen him the night before and said, you know, what do we have to do to get you to ride good here? You know, it's yellow, right? It's the big yellow arena. You don't like yellow. What is it? And he said, well, Lori, my favorite color is brown. And I said, all right, I'm sneaking in there tonight and I'm painting the whole thing brown. Now, you might be the only one that's able to see it because I'm going to use special paint, but that arena's brown from now on. Also going in, I had the opportunity to talk with Tyler Corrington, Dustin Flundra, Cody DeMoss, and Court Shear. I got a little information from them. And, you know, the question is, what don't we know about you that would make us understand and love you a little more? And what are you listening to going into the NFR if it's firing you up? So Cody's response to me was Spirit in the Sky. And I said, you know, great old Norman Greenbaum tune. I love it. You know, to me, it's a hymn. So I thought about it a little bit and I got a hold of Benjamin Daly, the sound man at the NFR. And I said, mm-hmm. just FYI, these are the songs that are lighting these four riders up right now. Last night, Benji played Spirit in the Sky all the way through Cody's ride. Cody knocked it out of the park, won him a go-round, awesome. Made Margie and the babies real happy. Whole family's raising the Louisiana roof up in here. It was all good stuff. Good stuff.
Cajun boys are rocking the house.
Them boys were rocking the house. Cole Elshier probably, you know, if we still gave Hard Luck Cowboy Awards, well, you know, there's Cody Wright, who dislocated mm-hmm. his shoulder badly enough they had to take him to the hospital and put him under anesthesia to relocate it.
Oh, geez.
Now, at the NFR, if you doctor out of any round, you're out for two. Out of one, mm-hmm. out for two. So mm-hmm. there was some question as to whether he'd ride again last night, and he did. The horse he drew was Spring Planting of Big Bend Flying Fives up in the Pacific Northwest. She yeah. was the co-bucking horse of the year last year. So to get past this mare when you're 100% healthy is a feat. To get past a horse of that caliber when your riding arm has just been dangling like, you know, 16 inches below your knee 2 days ago is, you know, it's a miracle. This happened and the judges marked him. He missed her out. So that's got to be a hard luck story. The other hard luck yeah. story belongs to Cole Elshier. Now, Cole is a salty little rider. Again, no bigger than a minute, looks completely gorgeous on one, real soft in the free arm, fluid in his upper body. He's a good old boy from Faith, South Dakota, and is one of my favorite people. He and Spencer Wright actually are both wearing Bronc Ride Nation trophy buckles that they got from the matches this year. Nice. So Cole last night, you know, he's got his last shot to win a round. And I, you know, forgive me, I don't have the information in front of me. I forget what horse bucked him off so handy, but it was the most spectacular buck off I've ever seen. He lost his swells. The horse did a little dido. He ended up sitting backwards in the saddle the next jump, spun again, right side in the saddle on the swells and pow, off to the dirt, you know.
Wow.
But it was a spectacular buck off for a kid that had just had a rough finals, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I interviewed Justin Kaler on my show a while back, and Cole is going to be in the movie Floating Horses about Casey Tibbs, so that'll be cool.
Yes, it's an exciting opportunity for Cole. It certainly is. Yeah. And he's a winning young man. He truly is. I mean, he's very mm-hmm. young, and he's a great interview. He's a little on the 605 quiet side. it's a purist thing, the bronc riding in South Dakota. But he's, you know, yes. he's drop dead gorgeous, got a smile that melts hearts, big brown eyes, you know, and a personality and the ability to match. So Cole's future is very, very bright.
Yeah, that was, I knew you would have all the inside dirt on the Saddlebronc Riding for sure. Right. Well, and then the other one was in the bareback riding. Poor Stephen Peebles got pretty jacked up.
Poor Stephen Peebles. And what a tough call, but a great decision. You know, I mean, I'm all about the backstory. So I visit, you know, and I've never met a stranger. So I visit with everybody I see. The security guards where the media team walks in is also the handicapped entrance. So I asked the ladies at the guard gate. It's like, so, you know, you work every organized sport that's hosted here at the University of Las Vegas. And they said, well, yes, we do. And I said, so what is our percentage of wheelchair people to the mainstream population? And they looked at me and they said, it is exponentially higher. You have more wheelchair fans in this sport than any sport we've ever seen. And it's a testament to, you know, that what we do has a huge danger factor. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a timed event person or a rough stock rider, we're dealing with animals that are huge and we are not, and we take risks. It's a double-edged sword. Nobody would not take those risks, you know, but to see Stephen Peebles go, oh, let me see, I have shattered a vertebra. And if the right kind of compression happens, oh, in the bareback riding, what are the chances of that? I will be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. Or
yeah,
I can opt out and 8 weeks and I'm back to riding. So yeah, it was, you know, a tough call, but a very sound call on his part.
Yep. Yeah. That's so hard to compete all year and, you know, just drive your tail off to get to every rodeo, win enough to make the NFR. And then how many rounds did he ride in?
I'm thinking by the fourth round he was out.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a shame because so many of those guys really count on their NFR earnings to make a little money for the year. But I think he definitely made the right decision there. So,
well, next year, with all the new money that Las Vegas has added to the NFR, every qualifier will immediately get a check for $10,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is wonderful. At the Gold Card
Reunion. It's about time.
Yes, at the Gold Card Reunion, Deb Copenhaver, all-time bronc riding great, stood up and spoke to us a little bit. And what he said was, you know, he thinks that the best new thing in rodeo is that. Because although you'll look at the year-end standings and see that you know, that the leader has made $120,000 throughout the year, he spent $130,000 to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, having, you know, saying, yes, come to the NFR, and here, by the way, is $10,000 so you can, I don't know, feed your family, buy tickets, you know, get a room.
Stay in Vegas for 10 days.
right. Hire those taxi cabs. Yeah, yeah. So that's a wonderful thing that they've got going on there.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad to see some of that happening because it's been needed for a long time.
Absolutely.
Well, and I was really excited also for Luke Branquino winning his fifth world championship after being hurt and just barely coming back to start practicing a couple weeks before the rodeo started.
I don't know if you watched the broadcast last night. And
I didn't.
Luke's a good guy, but he is kind of mirrors Trevor from Brazil. Their public personality is one thing, and they are fierce competitors, and they are down there in that zone. They are focused, and they're not coming off that path. They see one thing, they see the prize. So he's generally a fairly stiff interview, and because you're taking time away from his horses, you're taking time away from his rest, you know, he's not necessarily the best interview in the whole world. He puts on the face and makes it happen, but you can see that this is somebody who would prefer to be somewhere else. Right. Last night during the buckle presentation, he broke down and sobbed just from the experience and was busy thanking everybody who facilitated him and supported him. And, you know, for everybody you see in the limelight, there is a tribe behind them. You know, and he started mentioning all those people and just broke to big, huge sobs. And, you know, to see a Luke Branquino crying his eyes out and saying, look, I'm not a weeper, but oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. You know, I think that's very important. You know, we're, you know, getting into some strange animal rights concerns, you know, I mean, we're under a microscope with a certain percentage of the population. Thank God it's a small percentage. But mm-hmm. we're taught, we're actually schooled to, you know, to with talking points. And the main talking point has always been, these animals are how we make our living. They're how we feed our families. How could we mistreat an animal that we depended on so much? And I've always thought that was an error. I thought, you know, really, nobody does this because of the money. We do it for the passion and the love of what we mm-hmm. do. And it's really kind of not John Wayne Cowboy to talk about how much you love your horse, but but to see one of the world champions, you know, break down and cry because of the emotional experience he's having. I think that's good for the sport. I really do. So mm-hmm. my hat's off to Luke for, you know, for his win, for being a great competitor, always fun to watch, bringing a little flamboyance to the arena and not being afraid to put himself out there last night.
Yeah. Luke, he's a great guy. I mean, I went to college, or we were in college at the same time in California. So I know him pretty well, and he has a great family, and he's a good guy. So I'm happy to see him having so much success. And I mean, I've never seen Luke break down and cry before, but just knowing his family, you know, they're great people. So right. I can see that.
So getting back to the bareback riding, can I tell you an interesting side story that was happening during the NFR?
Yes, I would love to hear it.
Caleb Bennett is one of the most gorgeous young men inside and out in the bareback riding. I mean, he rides great. He's photogenic as can be. I look for that to promote this. So Caleb and I are friends. He's quirky. He's sweet boy, but he's a little quirky. So he showed up this year with hair that was, you know, past shoulder length. And I'm thinking, I've never seen him grow hair before. You know, I wonder what that's all about. And it's a mane. This boy has a mane. So early on, I drug him up in the media room and said, what's with the hair, buddy? And he's like, hey, long hair, don't care. And it's like, right, whatever, what? Well, it turns out that J.D. Landingham is one of his bareback riding traveling partners. And mm-hmm. J.D.'s mother 4 years ago was diagnosed with some form of cancer. So she went and underwent chemo and radiation, as you do, and she lost her hair. She was, you know, understandably mortified by it. So her son and his whole posse shaved their heads bald to stand with their mom. Mm-hmm. So when her hair started to grow back, they let theirs grow out too. It's just a sign of solidarity with her. You know, it's like when your hair mm-hmm. gets long enough, you let us know and we'll cut ours. So now the mission is, Caleb was measuring his last night when I'm speaking to him, and he's like, four more inches, and we're donating our hair to Locks of Love and then going back to being normal human beings. But I thought that was awesome. A great story. In the calf roping, the calf roper started a trend. They were wearing, peacock blue feathers.
Yeah, I saw those.
That's to raise awareness for a cowboy crisis fund in the Little Bridges, going back to the wheelchair people that we produce in our sport. Mm-hmm. There's a cowboy crisis fund, the Justin Cowboy Crisis Fund for the PRCA, but they're looking to establish one for the youth ranks. And mm-hmm. That's why everybody was wearing the blue feathers, to raise awareness for that and to try to, you know, gain contributions. Another thing we're working on, another political agenda that we're working on out here is last year, the Bronc Ride Nation team worked real hard to get the High School Association to offer steer, bear, and bronc riding at the junior high level. So it gives a kid, you know, it gives kids mm-hmm. coming into the sport a chance to earn their spurs, to hone their skill on something that isn't a big, strong horse that's going to throw you 50 feet up into the rafters and break an egg in you when he's done. So we're just looking to develop the rider base and, you know, fan base in a lot of different levels. And this was one of our focuses. The PRCA top 10, our top 15 in both the Bears and Bronx got behind it, signed petitions, worked with us, and we got that passed. Well, we were all, you know, celebrating, woohoo, we got this done, this is great. And the High School Association said, yeah, the easy part's over. You know, you've done the campaign, you've gotten it passed. Now you need to raise $50,000 for year-end awards. And we're like, oh, $50,000. So we're looking to the Gold Card members and some of the old iconic Hall of Famer Bronc riders to help us promote that cause. And, you know, it's not going to be any one person that steps up with $50,000. What's going to happen is we're going to raise it. We're going to raise it one chunk at a time, but we are going to raise it. So that's another thing we've been working on out here. Larry Mahan seemed interested in helping us, so we're tickled with that.
Good. That's a great win. So do you have some more kind of behind the scenes stories that were going on all week? I mean, I just happened to notice a video on your Facebook page of Dale Brisby, who I'd never heard of before. Who is this character?
Well, you know, we went steadily downhill throughout this NFR. You know, when we started, we had several horror stories we wanted to tell. We wanted to cover the Gold Card reunion. I mean, there's, you know, lots of good mainstream stuff. But, you know, this is rodeo, and we're a niche sport that don't necessarily fit into the mainstream world. We always have our cult heroes, right? Mm-hmm. Back in my era, it was a little band called Ricky and the Red Streaks. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, big party band, off the wall, walked the line at Raunchy, blew the roof off several places. It was the party animal's place to be. It was the Ricky and Red Streaks show. Now it's Luke Kaufman, who is a young man from South Carolina, of all unlikely places, wanted to be a bull rider, rode bulls for a while, but always had a guitar in his hand and was picking. Being from North Carolina, it's a cultural melting pot there. So his band, he calls them, it's Luke Kaufman and Black Blind and Broke. His drummer and best friend is a black man from North Carolina, bangs them kettles. Oh my goodness. His bass player is stone blind. They lead him onto the stage and back off of the stage. And his rhythm player is Robbie Hodges, the NFR barrel man. So here's one of my favorite lines from a Luke Kaufman song. My daddy was hung as a horse thief. My mama, she was burned as a witch. I got 16 sisters working in a whorehouse, and me, I'm a bull riding son of a, you know. And it just raises the roof. This kid is unassuming and quiet. He got his influences from the Rolling Stones. He plays old Hank. Original, original, original. And to me, that's the cowboy culture. You know, we are original people and individuals, and I love that. So Dale Brisby, we are loading up in the car in the parking lot one night, and we hear this hooping and hollering and looking up, and Heath DeMoss and this guy that looks like an escapee from Duck Dynasty and a couple other fellers are lined up against Heath's big cinch van. And Hallie's taking a picture. And I'm like, Mardi Gras has done come to Las Vegas. What is up with this? Well, I'm interviewing Sterling Crawley. And I ask him the same canned question that I asked Fallon. So, Sterling, if you had an alter ego, who would that be and why? And little Sterling, whose character, Jacobs, I'm so sorry, the brothers confuse me, Jacobs, blows his chest out and points his chin up in the air, and he says, Dale Brisby would be my alter ego. He's a real man, a man's man. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, look him up on YouTube. And I started scratching my head going, who is Dale Brisby? Well, you know, that's all it takes for me. Who is Dale Brisby? And I'm going to find Dale Brisby, and I'm going to find what he's about. So we ended up hanging out with Dale Brisby for a couple of hours. We did a photo shoot of him in front of Thomas and Mac, which is hysterical. You know, I have spent time with this man, and I'm his biggest fan. And all I can tell you is look him up on YouTube. Hashtag do it now, pow, pow. After you do it, you'll know what I just said. It is hysterical, hysterical stuff. This born on the Radiator Ranch. First fat bramers in the necks, riding bulls and punching fools. On to the next one, pow, pow. Dale Brisby. Holy cow. He introduced Lee Greenwood out here, was the media darling of the town. You know, just, I've seen it come and go in rodeo, but there's only one Dale Brisby. You have to check him out.
Yeah, I did watch a couple of YouTube videos today because I had to, I'm like, who is this guy? And right. Like, where did he come from?
Exactly. Well, he came from the Radiator Ranch.
Well, yeah, I should have known that, I guess. I'm like, is that his real hair? Is it a wig? I mean, I don't know.
It's all I can say is it's one of those Texas outlaw things, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Too astounding, too funny. Yeah. His agent and manager is this gorgeous young lady. Her name is Monkey. Monkey. Yeah, you can get your Dale Brisby t-shirts. You know, I'm a dedicated bronc riding reporter. I've kept my words fairly harsh about bull riding for the past 4 years because, you know, it's like, I'm over it. Who cares? When I was a kid, I rode bulls. I did it because with choice between riding bulls and riding bucking horses, bull riding was the easy way out, sister. I took the coward's route. I rode bulls, right? So you know, I'm just kind of over it. I've been around a long time. I'm jaded. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, whatever. You know, we need to do something for the bucking horse community, and you've all done real well. And, you know, go on with your bad selves, but you're not going to have me following you around. So for me to be at the NFR wearing a t-shirt proudly that says riding bulls and punching fools, it's just another example of keep your words soft, sister, because just about the time you think you're ready to close the door on something, it'll bloom and you'll want to be running right back through it again. So, you know, there's that.
So he's just a bull rider that kind of created this sort of brand, this personal brand for himself?
He is a character, a philosopher, an absolute redneck hero. He is the best of a cowboy. He's the worst of the cowboy, and he is a YouTube phenomenon. You know, yeah. I mean, Dale Brisby.
I think if he can get more people interested and pulled into the, you know, rodeo world, then I think that's great.
Thank you. It takes all sorts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what I've always loved about rodeo, several years ago, Sid Steiner, Tommy Steiner's son, was bulldogging.
Yep. Yeah.
Sid is a beautiful, beautiful thing to behold. He came out here, rode his Harley out. He had his hair done up in cornrows.
I remember that.
Right. And when he won a round, which he won several, he would rip off his shirt and ride his own horse around the arena, spinning his shirt over his head. Fined by the PRCA, but did it because that was him. That's individual. Mm-hmm. That's outlaw. So you either hated Sid Steiner or you loved Sid Steiner. I was in the love camp, obviously. You know, you can't scare me. And my idea of, you know, my worst nightmare is being bored. Do not bore me. Oh, my stars. You know, try to scare me. Try to excite me. Let's be real. Let's be on the edge. Let's go out there where the heart pumps and the adrenaline is real and the edge crumbles a little bit. I don't want to stand back and be bored. So I've always been a fan of that. And the Dale Brisbys of the world, as well as the Luke Kaufmans of the world, are just absolutely, you know, they are carrying the flag for those of us old outlaws that are too old to do much but stand back and say, go on, bull hand. Go on, bull hand. You know? Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. I had the privilege this year of working with Mallory Beinborn of Impulse Photography. Not since Sue Rosehoff have I seen a more artistic, creative person who can tell the romantic story of rodeo and the horsemanship that goes on and the interaction and the heart and soul commitment with a lens as Mallory can. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big Sue fan, and I'm a big fan of Dale Miller's, who is the most classic action rodeo photographer that I know. But working closely with Mallory was so much fun because, you know, when I write, it's, you know, I write in the way of a dime novelist. You know, to me, it's the romance that made me fall in love. The old style when the West was wild and the journalists came out from the city and followed the outlaws around and created legends from Calamity Jane and Wild Bill Hickok, Billy the Kid. It's that kind of thing that I like to do. You know, I know what made me fall in love with this community, and I just like to project that image for the world to, you know, for them to enjoy what I get to see as well. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very fun working with Mallory because, you know, her vision is the same, and she's highly creative and absolutely go forward. You know, the 12, 14-hour days didn't daunt her one bit. You know, she never let up, kept smiling, kept shooting, kept working for that, working to get that unique shot that really, really shows the portrait, the heart and soul. So it was so much fun to work with Mallory here.
So I know, you know, every year there's some celebrity sightings at the NFR, and I saw a picture that I think you posted of Vince Vaughn. Is that the first time he's been there?
Well, I really don't know. Usually, this man is very, very private. He's been there every year. So I have not even learned his name, because if I learn his name, I'm going to have to talk to him. He comes with Charlie Sampson, and he plays the head of the hospital at, on Grey's
James
Anatomy.
James Pickens Jr.
There you go. Yeah. He was notably absent this year. Another notable absence that I'd like to talk about a little is Bob Tallman. For the first time during, you know, for an NFR in Las Vegas, Bob Tallman's voice was silent. He was not announcing this year, and it left a big hole in a lot of people's hearts. Bob was the kind of announcer. Rodeo announcers can be my absolute pet peeve. A good one, you know, you earn my heart and soul. A bad one, I just want to go take the microphone away from you and do it my own pedestrian self. You know, you've heard him. You know how annoying that can be.
Yes.
You know, Bob, you could always count on Bob for a little bit of controversy, for knowing his facts, and for that human connection. He had that rare gift where he could connect with everybody in the building. And he would start low, talking to a contestant or talking about a matchup, and he would build that excitement and that energy until, bam, they came out. And, you know, listening to Bob was just an emotional roller coaster. You rode with all these people. So, you know, missing Bob, I wanted to do a story on life without Bob, and was able to. And, you know, that took the sting out of it a little bit for me. But it was a little hollow. It was a little hollow without Bob. The boys that did it, Boyd and Wayne and Randy Corley, did an excellent job, but they're not Bob.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was another notable absence.
Yeah. And he's just been around for so long. It's going to be strange not having him there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Clyde and Elsie Frost are frequent flyers here. Got to visit with Clyde and Elsie, Lane's mom and dad a little bit.
Yeah.
They're such special, special people. You know, losing a child is just the biggest horror in the world. It is something that has just literally killed people. A lot of people never, ever recover from it. They taught us through the way they handled the death of their beloved son that there is life after something like that, and that the way to that life and to honor their dead children is to not only to be involved, but to carry on their spirit through yours, to carry on their spirit by inspiring others. They picked up where their iconic son left off. They have, they produce Bibles, Lane Frost Cowboy Bibles, and they distribute those for a small donation just to keep the program going. Every year at Cheyenne, they host a Sunday church service. Now, Cheyenne is the place where they lost their child.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people would let that get to them, and they would never want to see those grounds again. Clyde and Elsie embrace it, and they know that their son went to glory. And that's the message that they send, and they try to uphold what Lane stood for, which was nothing but positivity and genuine openness. And they're, you know, they are VIPs. They might not be movie stars, but they are definitely VIPs of our industry. And, you know, we love them to death.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's awesome. It's great to have them involved. And then the bull rider, the Frost bull rider, why can't I? Joe Frost.
Joe Frost is a cousin.
He's okay. Cousin. Yeah. Yes. I thought he was related somehow. So
yes, he is.
Cool.
And, I spent the morning with Sue Rosehoff. And if you're not familiar with her body of work, I suggest you take a look. Sue Rosehoff Rodeo Photography. Sue worked for Ansel Adams, classically trained. And she was the first rodeo photographer that actually took us behind the scenes into the lifestyle, into the road, into the training, into the parties, into the debauchery. You know, Sue brought us a bird's eye view and did it in such a stunning way in black and white that she's completely unforgettable. I visited with her this morning, And, you know, we were talking about just that, talking about, you know, how to showcase rodeo. And so if you're not familiar with her body of work, check her out. She worked closely with Lane and photojournaled the whole Red Rock series and was right up there with him. She brought Joe Frost up this morning, and a girl I worked with for Cowboys and Indians. Her name is Lindsay Welchel, talented young writer. She also works for the Cowboy Bull Riders, the CBR Tough Hedemans group, Championship Bull Riders.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she's, you know, devoted to the Bull Riders, knows them, knows their backstories. You know, she's to the CBR like I am to the Bronc Riders. So it was interesting talking to her because it gave me some insight. And she said, you know that Joe Frost? And I said, yeah. And she goes, look at his smile. Sometimes it is scary because it belongs to Lane. So, you know, I never got close to him and, you know, really didn't have a relationship with Lane at all. When I was speaking to Sue this morning, we were talking about a project she's working on. She's got some dramatic Lane Frost posters and has a calendar and a book coming out. And it's all her dramatic heart and soul work. So I asked her, I said, so, you know, Lindsay said that this boy has Lane's smile. And she looked at me with that look that you only get when something haunts you. And she said, it is just one tick off. And yes, it is. It's scary. It is just scary. So we look for great things from young Joe.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to have, you know, and he won the Linderman Award this year, didn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, so that's really cool. Both ends of the arena.
There you go.
Well, what were some of the other things like going on around town? Because, I mean, I hadn't been down to Vegas for 5 years. This is the first year I'd gone for 5 years since I moved back to Montana. And it was incredible to me just how much it's grown, how much the rodeo activity around Vegas has grown. Because it used to be kind of like everybody would go to, you know, back in the day, it was the Gold Coast or then later the South Point. And then there was like certain places that everyone would go hang out. And now it seems like every casino has their own party and there's these there's always been concerts, but it just seems like it's even bigger than before.
Well, let me just give a shout out here to Las Vegas Events. Las Vegas Events is one of the, it is arguably the most dynamic tourism machines in the United States. They encourage to increase the prize money and, you know, increase the NFR's validity. They encourage, you know, obviously sponsorship through the various casinos. And they don't stop there. Once they get their check, they don't stop. What Las Vegas Events does is they go sit down with the casino's entertainment directors and they say, this is how you activate and actualize your sponsorship. So everything from the Venetian has a place called the Roadhouse Bar. After the rodeo every night, they have a bucket machine contest. That's hosted again by Luke Kaufman. So that's one of the kinds of things. There was a 30th anniversary of Rodeo in Las Vegas gathering of the gold card members at the Palms, which is one of the most gorgeous photogenic buildings you've ever been in your life. It was in the ballroom. There were everybody who has ever rodeoed was there. Deb Copenhaver gave a speech that just brought us to tears. Harry Vold got up and talked about the changes in rodeo. His quote was, the first bronc riding I saw, there was three guys. They rode off of a snub horse and the prize money was $6. From there, we started a rodeo company and we would trail our livestock from rodeo town to rodeo town. We'd hold them on lush pastures and send somebody ahead to sell a performance and they'd ride back in and they'd say, okay, we're going here. So we'd drive the stock over there and put on a rodeo and then go hold them on grass somewhere until we got the next one booked. He said, from there, it went to railroad. We shipped our stock from town to town on railroad. And he said, to me, it's the best way to travel. I hate trucks. I hate trucking my animals. If we could go back to the train days, that would make me happy. And, you know, when these people talked, you could smell campfires and coffee. You know, you were sitting there with your dusty boots and just listening to those old cowboy tales. It was so, so, so rich. Red Steagall, Red Steeple has been an icon in the industry. He discovered Reba McEntire because she would sing. She'd sing. She and her little brothers would go get a hat. And, you know, back in those days, rodeos lasted for, you know, 5 days. There were several go-rounds. So all the contestants would come to town and they would stay in town until the short go and then they were gone. So the community aspect of it was a lot deeper then. Well, Reba and her brother would go throw a hat on the ground and they'd sing for tips, right? Mm-hmm. Shine people's boots, sing for tips, something to do, right? Well, she started singing the national anthem. And a woman came up to Red Steeple one day and said, you know, you're going, they said that you were going back up to your room and you're going to pick and sing for a while. You're going to have a room party. And Red said, well, yeah, we are. And she said, can I bring my little girl? Well, you know, room parties are typically not the place for small children.
Right.
But this is Red Steeple. You know, the room party was a little different. And he thought about it a second, said, well, sure, ma'am. And he thought it was kind of the oddest thing he'd ever heard. And here come this little red-headed, freckle-faced girl with big pipes up in there. And he said, honey, let's go to Nashville. So Red loaded up Reba and took her to Nashville, and the rest is history. Mm. You know, the reason she no longer sings the national anthem at the NFR is because she felt it was a huge break in tradition when they moved to the NFR from Oklahoma City to Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
And she didn't like it. She thought that it would be the downfall of rodeo. She thought that it would kind of take the heart and soul and change it more, you know, change it into a corporate direction, which it has, you know, and that's a double-edged sword. But that's why you've not seen Reba at the national finals for, you know, since we came to Vegas.
Hmm.
Interesting stuff. I was able to introduce Jan Uren. Jan Uren is, her last name is spelled Y-O-U-R-E-N. She is from the Oregon, the Great Basin country. Mm-hmm. She's a bronc rider. She was a bareback rider. That was her specialty. I met her on the trail when I was running barrels. She was in her late 40s and still getting on broncs. And we visited for a long time.
That's crazy. Because
How can you resist that, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, she told me about, you know, riding with broken arms and, you know, trying to do this and ranching by herself and, you know, riding colts. And there had been several husbands, several men, because she is beauty still to this day. But rodeo and her focus always brought her back. She was a very poor wife. She's a great cowgirl, but she was a very poor wife, which, you know, I just kind of think that's pretty special too, to be honest. But Kayla Mussel is the only woman who has ever held a PRCA bronc rider's card. She earned it about 2 years ago, and she's flamboyant. She's out there flying the flag. So she happened to be at the gold card reunion, and I noticed Jana was able to put those two together. Kayla, at this point in time, is sporting a rainbow peacock-colored mohawk.
I saw a picture of her.
There you go. She's a little difficult to miss. So I caught her by the arm and brought her to Miss Jan. And on the way over, Kayla's saying, you know, she's saying, where am I going? What are you doing with me now, Lori? And it's like, I'm going to introduce you to the woman who opened the door for you.
Yeah.
And she stopped any kind of resistance, and her eyes got wide, and she nodded and fell right into lockstep with me. And we got over to Jan, and Jan takes one look at this peacock girl. And I said, Miss Jan, I said, this lady owns her PRCA card. She's a bronc rider. Those two looked at each other, and we caught them in that moment. And it was a cool thing. You know, we hear a lot. I had the astounding experience of being born in an era where women really emerged. You know, my mother's generation and my daughter's generation are so separate, so very different. Mm. And, you know, I was a part of that crux generation. So I hear a lot of the younger girls. I hang out with the younger crowd because of what I do. And I hear a lot of the younger girls going, oh, well, those feminists, those this, those that. And you have to say, stop and wait. You know, look back at your history, because I don't care what you're taught to believe about them today. You wouldn't be who you are today without them. So putting those two together was an astonishing experience. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I bet. That is pretty special. Gosh, just a lot of stuff going on down there. And I have to say, my brother lives in Las Vegas, and I grew up in Northern Nevada. And I've never, ever wanted to live in Las Vegas. I go down and visit him and wonder how he lives there. But the one time of the year when I do love being in Vegas is during the NFR, because everywhere you go, it's hats and boots and, you know, just the city is transformed.
The city is transformed. You know, last year I was at In-N-Out Burger, one of the highlights of the trip to Las Vegas, right? In-N-Out Burger, Blueberry Hill Cafe, and and Famosas Tacos down on the 24-hour drive-in joint down on Tropicana. My three favorite eating places here. So, you know, I love food. So that's a real big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea where I was going with that, Alyssa. What were we talking about, please? I'm so sorry. It's been a long week.
I know. We were just talking about how much the city is transformed in Las Vegas during the finals.
Yeah. My daughter and I dropped into In-N-Out Burger, and there was a gentleman who was working the dining room, you know, making sure the waste baskets were fed and the tables were cleaned. And he welcomed us in the warm and generous way that like a concierge would. So interesting character, older guy, Italian. So we started speaking to him, and he had been, you know, in the hospitality industry. He'd worked for Caesars for 30 years and retired, but found that he needed the exposure to people because he's such a people person. So we visited, and I said, so, you know, how do you feel about it when the rodeo comes to town? Oh, we love our cowboys. We love them. The generosity and the manners and you know, just with the heart that they bring to what they do and the way that they treat everybody, it's difficult not to be inspired. And it gave me the opportunity to buy my beautiful wife a cowboy hat and some crystal-covered jeans. And I bought her those for Christmas, and you just can't believe how sexy she looks in them. And then he broke into some Frank Sinatra tune and sung me a few bars of Fly Me to the Moon and completely won my heart and left. Clay Walker told the crowd that, you know, we play Vegas several times a year, but it is truly never what it is when NFR is in town. You truly make it a cowboy town. You are our people. We give it up for you 1,000%. You know,
Clay Walker is awesome. I went to his concert. Awesome. Yeah. Did you get to spend any time with him?
Yes, we did. Awesome. Yes, we did. Yeah. Got some great photography, spent some time with him backstage, you know, just did some interviews. Keith Stegall produces Clay, and his wife Janet was the Mississippi Rodeo Queen.
Oh.
So, you know, whenever I'm in Nashville, it's their place that I stay at, and they live right across the street from Clay. Well, he has a band of renegade goats that you'll look out and they'll be in the front yard eating the shrubbery. You know, so, you know, one of the ways I earn my keep when I'm staying in Nashville is, you know, I go chase Clay's goats and go repent them. You know, yeah. So it was pretty much fun. It's like, hi, Clay. I've never met you, but I know your goats pretty well. And he looked at me and just said, oh, I'm so sorry. And I smiled at him and said, you know, you don't know me, honey. I think that's fun. You know, chasing nasty renegade goats is just a blast for me. So he's a warm and genuine person with true cowboy roots, and was very interesting to do. But, you know, he too echoed the fact that, you know, Vegas is a cowboy town, trumps Vegas as any other kind of town that it could possibly morph into.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pretty cool stuff. And there's a lot to do for people who even aren't maybe that into going to every single round of the rodeo, which is, there's nothing else like being in the Thomas and Mack. I just have to say, I mean, I was there for the first night, and I've been several times, but it was every single time when I get in that building and just the energy of everybody in there and the grand entry, I get choked up. I get teary every time I'm in there. It's just incredible. It is. You just can't explain it to someone who hasn't been there. You know,
it will melt the jaded heart. You know, I'm a gypsy and I'm 58 years old. So I've been to a lot of places and done a lot of stuff that I think is so exceptionally cool. But, you know, you will get a little jaded. So, you know, it's a trip to Las Vegas. You've got a plane. You've got to pack. You've got to fly, for crying out loud. I hate public transportation. You know, I end up serving several masters. You know, here I'm working for Bobby Pecora of the World Class Bucking Horse Association's Bucking Stock Magazine, Cowboys and Indians, Rodeo Fame, Survey World Championship Rodeo Company. So I serve several masters and then have several projects of my own. So it is, you know, there is no such thing as rest. People say, oh, you're going to party and have a good time. And it's like, I'm going to have a good time, but it's because I love what I do.
Right.
Right. But, you know, I'm over the trip long before I ever get to the airport. I got my lips stuck out. I'm about half snorty, you know. All it takes, I get into that arena and the house lights go down and the opening starts. And it is like God, his own self, has come and kissed me on the forehead and says, you have been such a good little girl. Look, here you are. Thank me later. Enjoy yourself. Mm. Yes, there's nothing like the NFR.
Yep. Ugh. Yeah, it's an incredible feeling to be in there in that building for sure. So, well, is there anything else? I mean, any other good stories we need to talk about, or is that kind of cover the you know, week and a half in Vegas?
That kind of covers it. You know, I mean, there's everything that you would want, from art to fashion to, you know, all kinds of culture. You know, both going forward, which is the Dale Brisbys and the Luke Coffins, and you know, being able to sit down and visit with Harry Vold, who drove his livestock from town to town.
Ugh.
You know, the fashion show, the WPRI fashion show, just raised $85,000 for the Justin Cowboy Crisis Fund. Bob Tallman does a bowling tournament every year over at the Gold Coast that also benefits a charity. You know, the rodeo community is all about giving back. You know, I mean, we're such good citizens of the world, which is what a lot of people, if I had one message that I could share with the mainstream world, is that the rodeo community is the most underpaid yet grateful and generous community in all of major sports. Mm-hmm. You know, I would share that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just talking to someone about this yesterday. The people, the best part of being a part of the rodeo world and a part of the Western lifestyle and the Western world in general is the people. I mean, it's just amazing the wonderful people that you get to know and get to call your friends and get to spend your time with. And I mean, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
I don't know any place else in the world that you can go that it is such a social faux pas to not introduce everybody who has walked into a group. That's the first thing, the cordial introductions. And when a lady is introduced to a gentleman, he removes his hat, places it over his heart with his left hand, and reaches and catches your hand with his right, and will drop his eyes and give you sort of a half bow. In Western culture, that doesn't happen, except for right here. Doors are held. You know, nobody slams a door in your face. It is an astounding culture all of its own. And it is truly a gift to be able to live and work within this culture.
Yes, I would agree with that for sure. Well, Lori, you know, I guess before we wrap up, I'll go ahead and ask you the same question that I always ask every guest. Well, before I do that, is there anywhere that we can find you online? Can we find some of your stories on Cowboys and Indians and
Cowboys and Indians and rodeo? Blog. We'll be going forward. We'll be doing that. We're on a mission to bring the Cowboys and Indians back to Cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to spend this summer with the Real Bird family, some of the native stock contractors that raise great horses. Now, they won't get the credit for it because mostly the good horses they'll sell to the top contractors who, you know, who produce Cheyenne, who produce Pendleton. And, you know, as you know, that we don't trace the bucking horse history back very well, but there's a strong native influence. You know, in fact, you know, bucking horses came from the Calgary Remount program. That they were the original warm bloods. The carriage trade, you know, people raised the big draft horses for the carriage trade back east, back around the turn of the century. Before machination and the cavalry, the government came around and gave those big draft horse breeders, you know, strong, raw-boned, thoroughbred stallions to cross on them because they were looking for the perfect war horse for the Indian Wars. And what they got was the original Warmblood, and those babies bucked. They bucked. They were feral. They got loose. They, you know, they went away, and they were recaptured. And that's where our foundation bucking horses have come from. You know, so yeah, it's just interesting. It's interesting to be able to do that kind of thing. What was the question?
To know where people could find you online and if we could read some of your stories from the finals.
Cowboys and Indians, the blog, Bronc Riding Nation on Facebook all the time, Bucking Stock Magazine, Rodeo Fame Magazine. We seek media outlets in order to get the message out and provide those media outlets with quality content. So there are several places where you can keep track and follow us. We've got an Instagram account that's done by a wonderful young bronc rider named Garrett Morrison, Art Mortensen. And, you know, there are just several spots. Chances are, if it's a story about bucking horses or the deep culture of rodeo, it's been generated here. You know, what we do is, you know, I mean, I'm not a byline really isn't important to me. Lori O'Harver is, you know, she's a woman that likes to live behind the scenes. I like to stay invisible because that's where the stories are. You know, if you're too highly visible, the story changes slightly. So, you know, staying invisible. But chances are, if you're reading a good story that's well-written about bucking horses and stuff that you've never heard about these horses, chances are it's coming from the War Paint team and from Bronc Riding Nation. So look us up on Facebook on Bronc Riding Nation, and we'll let you know where else we are right from that platform.
Yes. Perfect. Well, that's awesome. I will, I'll go ahead and ask you the same question I ask everyone that comes on the show, because I am really curious to hear what your answer is. And that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Try. A good cowboy has to have relentless try. You know, without that relentless try, no amount of passion, no amount of skill, no amount of anything is going to get you where you need to be. A cowboy is all about try, effort beyond anything else, giving 110%. And when that 110% is exhausted, they'll reach and find 20% more to give you.
Try. Yeah. Yep. That's a pretty important one. Well, awesome, Lori. This has been great. I love hearing your insight about this year's finals, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on today.
Thank you, Alyssa. I would like to thank you for Earn Your Spurs. You know, what you do is just so parallel to what we do. You know, we need to tell the true stories, increase the fan base, give people who have a curiosity, give them some information to work with, because someone with information is able to make a decision for themselves. You know, if you don't have the information, you can be misled by anybody. And there's so much misleading information out there about rodeo and what we do and our livestock and the passion we have for them. And, you know, that we mirror what they are, which is free and fiercely independent. You know, what you do is very important. And I would just like to thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, Lori. And I hope to have a chance to work with you more in the future.
Oh, please, let's do that.
Yes.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lori O'Harver. As always, you can find links to the websites that were mentioned in this episode at earnyourspurs.com/episode18 in the show notes. If you've never been to the NFR, you should really consider making a trip down there. It's pretty incredible to be in Vegas that time of year. And like Lori and I talked about, there is nothing like being in the Thomas & Mack and experiencing the energy in there during the rodeo performance. And you do not even have to be a cowboy to enjoy the National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas. It's just, there is literally something for everyone. I would love to see you down there next year. And now is a good time to start making your plans, because certain hotels do fill up, like the South Point, where a lot of the activities go on. So think about it, because you will not regret going down there for the NFR. I promise it'll be an amazing experience. In the meantime, have a great day, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.